was a strange and historic moment one morning in 1995 when a large white truck pulled up into Yellowstone National Park carrying 8 Canadian wolves. This shipment of wolves had for years been the focal point of explosive political debates and the stuff of dreams for wildlife biologists. And after many false starts and almost dashed hopes, the day had finally arrived. Nobody knew exactly what would happen. This had never been tried before. One of the biologists' fears was realized right away. The alpha couple, a male and a pregnant female, immediately headed north, out of the park, trying to get back to their home in Canada. The male got shot by a rancher illegally, but rangers were actually able to find the female and the pups and bring them back to the safety of Yellowstone Park. And that couple and those pups became the ancestors of almost all of the wolves who are in Yellowstone today. Wolves are the heroes of this story that Megan told earlier, and it's a true story. Wolves had been hunted to eradication by 1930, and for almost 70 years, there were no wolves in the park. During this time, the health of the ecosystem and many species had declined. The trees and bushes around the waterways, the lakes, and the rivers had gotten munched down to nothing. The beavers didn't have anything to build their dams with, so they weren't doing so well, and the number of fish and animals that live in and near the water also dropped. Birds of all kinds were struggling. Really, it was only the elk who were good with the situation. And when the wolves came back, just as Megan described, one by one, all of the plants and the animals began to bounce back as well. Even the elk increased. They just had to hide more in the forest and not hang out snacking by the water so often. And the rivers themselves changed shape. They became deeper and faster flowing, with more estuaries that support wildlife and more sharply defined banks because the soil was better, because it was eroding less. The wolves brought back life to the earth. This story has another hero too, the scientists. The biologists who dreamed this up had the courage and the vision and the strength of their convictions to create the possibility for this extraordinary string of events. They tipped the first domino and nature took care of the rest. Today's story is part of this year's sermon series called Six Stories of Humans and the Earth. And we're exploring the relationship between humans and the Earth through each of our six Unitarian Universalist sources. The source of this story, and you can see these all listed in your order of service, the source of today's story is humanist teachings which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit. This rebirth of Yellowstone through the predation of the wolves has, above all, been a triumph of science over the idolatries of mind and spirit, idolatries in this case meaning superstitions and fears. Biologists had long known that wolves were a vital missing link in the Yellowstone ecosystem. They had long studied the impact of losing an important predator from the food chain. They had analyzed in other places the importance of those top-level predators, a cascade of positive impacts that can affect the entire ecosystem. So in the late 80s and 90s, scientists proposed the reintroduction of wolves to Yellowstone with exactly this intention. The wolves were clearly the missing puzzle piece, and so this was a rational plan based in science. Wolves had been an important part of the ecosystem in the northern hemisphere for millennia. But wolves have a bad reputation. They have a larger-than-life mythic association for people as dangerous, big, bad, cunning, sly, even evil. Children's stories and mythology are full of wolves preying on innocent kids. Take Little Red Riding Hood, where the villain is a wolf and the victims are the very archetype of innocent helplessness, a little old grandmother and a little girl. And the wolf, a male wolf, of course, eats them both. And take the story of the three little pigs, where the wolf huffs and puffs and blows the house down. And take the story of Peter and the wolf. Prokofiev's musical setting has a melody for the wolf that sounds like this. Scary, right? These myths have persisted. Because although wolf attacks on humans are exceedingly rare, wolves are fierce and sophisticated predators for the animals that they do attack. It's really hard to fathom that the modern toy poodle is somehow related. And so because of all this, when scientists revealed plans to reintroduce wolves to Yellowstone, public opposition was intense. Ranchers in the surrounding areas feared that the wolves would kill their livestock, which of all the objections was actually the one reasonable one. Some people feared for their lives, and some people feared for the elk. Elk, unlike wolves, were an animal that people actually liked. Again, based on mythology and sentimentalism, maybe because elk are innocent vegetarians and they have cool antlers like Rudolph. The battles about this became so heated that at one point the governor threatened to call the National Guard and have them stop the shipment of wolves at the border. But in spite of all this, science prevailed this time, and the results have been spectacular. There are now 13 wolf packs living in Yellowstone. No wolf has attacked a human in the 22 years since they have been back. They have killed some livestock in the surrounding area, cows and sheep, but more livestock are killed by other predators, and environmental groups actually now compensate ranchers for any livestock lost to wolves. So what we saw was a battle between, on one hand, reason paired with hope and ambition for the future, and on the other hand, largely irrational fears rooted in myth and legend. How often we have that same battle going on in our own hearts. We have part of us that has a pretty solid theory about what we need to do to bring our ecosystems into balance. What just might make a world of positive difference in our own lives or someone else's. And we have the part of us that holds back because of fears rooted in our internal legends and myths. Stories about who we are or who someone else is, or memories of how we've been hurt in the past. We may have a myth that says, if I get married, my spouse will huff and puff and blow my house down. I'll lose myself as an individual. Or one that says, I'm just a little old grandmother. I'm too old to change careers without getting eaten alive. Or one that says, if I raise my kid to be too independent and walk in the woods alone, she'll be weird and she'll have no friends and she'll hate me and it'll be all my fault. These are all fear-based myths that are often not true and not serving us. But they can be so powerful that sometimes we want to call up the National Guard and have them stop the shipment of whatever it is at the border. And then there's the aspirational boldness, that voice of reason and hope. To the myth about marriage, this voice says, but I love this person and I want to share my life with them. To the myth about career, this voice says, many people have changed their careers late in life and I can too. To the myth about the child, the voice says, as a parent, I am in the unique position of being able to help my child become her own person. Like the wildlife biologists, we don't know for sure if a new wild idea will work. We know things could go wrong. When we let our own internal wolf out of its cage, it might just head north and try to get home, and it might just get hurt. But we also know that if we take that leap and take that risk, and it does work, it could succeed beyond our wildest imagination, cascading down to every dimension of our lives and relationships. We have these two voices battling inside us. Which one will win? This question is answered in another legend that also happens to be about wolves. This is from the Cherokee Nation. An old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. A fight is going on inside me, he says to the boy. It is a terrible fight, and it is between two wolves. One is evil. He is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. And he continued, the other is good. He is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. That same fight is going on inside you and inside every other person, too. The grandson thought about it for a moment, and then he asked his grandfather, which wolf will win? The old Cherokee simply replied, the one you feed. At the beginning of this new year, some of us are making resolutions and dreaming about how to make big changes in our lives. How can we get the delicate ecosystems of our own world into health and balance? It can be daunting and scary, even overwhelming. It's hard to know where to start and how to do it. Some of us make New Year's resolutions, but they always seem a little grandiose and hard to keep, and most of them fail. None of us, not all of us, are prepared to order the equivalent of a fresh shipment of live wolves every single year. To me, when I feel daunted by the scale of a change or project or year ahead of me, I find the story of the reintroduction of wolves to the Yellowstone tremendously comforting, because it tells me that just like in those emails that we got about year-end giving, that when we give, when we make a donation, however small, that donation will be matched. That if I do one small thing, the right kind of thing, life itself will give me an extra push. The story shows how nature can do so much with so little. It was just 8 wolves in Yellowstone initially who changed everything. It teaches that we too, in our own lives, can do so much with so little if we are working in and with the flow of nature. Sometimes all we have to do is take one small step in the right direction, and nature will take it from there. And even though this is supposed to be a story drawn from our source about reason and science, I can't help but notice that there is something mystical about this. I can't help but feel awe at the power and wisdom of the workings of the universe. And so I invite you into this new year, yes, with reason and science, but also with a bit of faith. That if we feed the wolf of hope instead of the wolf of fear, if we feed the wolf of compassion instead of the wolf of resentment, if we feed the wolf of generosity instead of the wolf of greed, if we feed the wolf of truth instead of the wolf of deception, If we feed the wolf of kindness instead of the wolf of ego, if we are true to ourselves instead of to our own self-limiting myths, and set our intention toward health and balance, it will trigger a cascade of goodness that will pour into our lives and out into our families, our communities, and the ecosystem of this world that needs it so badly. And so, as we head into this strange and somewhat daunting new year, I invite each of us to take some time and ask ourselves, which wolf are we going to feed this year?